Well, hello everyone. Before I begin, I would also like to acknowledge country and that we're meeting today on Ngunnawal land and pay my respects to elders past and present. I feel enormously privileged that I'm born in a nation that has the opportunity to share in the richness and significance of the world's oldest continuous living culture. I'm going to go off script, so I did have a bit of a speech prepared today, and I've sort of torn that up because we've had such a fabulous background introduction in our previous session and also with our speakers here today. Forgive me if it's perhaps a little bit clumsy along the way, but I thought I'd try and pick up on a few different things and bring a different perspective and perhaps share with you a little bit more about my own company's story and why we're involved in the Global Compact. So, as Mike mentioned, I chair the board of the network at Global Compact Network Australia, and so I'm a bit of a generalist. That's a voluntary role, I must admit, and so my full-time role is working for KPMG. And we call, I guess, you know, in terms of language, I think corporate responsibility, corporate sustainability, corporate citizenship are often used interchangeably. The reason why we've chosen corporate citizenship for KPMG Australia, I guess, is a sense of that role that all of us have to play as citizens individually, but also collectively, as a national company, but also the role that we can play in helping to make our world a better place through our business activities. You know, business, I think, has often been seen as the kind of evil player. And in fact, when I moved to corporate Australia after spending more than a decade in the not-for-profit sector, a lot of people said to me that I was going to the dark side. I celebrate 10 years this year with KPMG, and I have to say there's a good reason for that, and that's because the integrity and the commitment behind the company's contribution to community is absolutely second to none. Commitment to communities is one of the firm's core values, but it actually is very much at the heart of the organisation's values. And I think for a professional services firm to be as engaged as we are in sustainable development and other issues, if we can do it, pretty much anyone can. So I'll tell you a little bit more about what we're doing in a moment. But just to give you a quick overview of the United Nations Global Compact, just pop on to the next slide. It is the world's largest corporate sustainability initiative, and there's about 8,000 businesses globally who are signatories to the Global Compact. It is a principles-based initiative. It's not a compliance initiative. And it's really a practical framework for action and also a platform for companies to demonstrate their commitment and leadership around corporate sustainability issues. Companies commit to aligning their operations and strategies with the 10 universally accepted principles in the areas of human rights, labour, environment, and anti-corruption, and to supporting societal goals. The UN Global Compact was launched in 2000 as the business engagement platform for the UN and its broader agenda. And in the 15 years, it's gone from strength to strength. So just to jump into the next slide, they're the 10 principles. And as I say, it's not a compliance initiative, but in terms of the process, CEOs are required to write a letter of commitment to those principles, which is submitted to the Global Compact office in New York. Those companies are then researched and vetted for any key complaints in any of those key areas. And the requirement to staying part of the network is that they are asked to report on an annual basis in terms of their progress against those principles. Many of those do that with a standalone report. Many of it do it as part of their broader sustainability report. This year there were several hundred companies that were actually delisted, so the Global Compact is getting tougher on companies and particularly their reporting against progress. So I do know that UN can sometimes be accused of being a bit of a toothless tiger, but they are trying to get a little bit more robust and rigor around what they're doing. As I mentioned, it's not just those principles, but it's really access to the broader UN agenda. And so there's some quite specific initiatives and platform and issue areas that the Global Compact has been championing. These are some of them. As you see, caring for climate, and I'll talk a little bit more about that just in a moment. Children's rights and business principles, and the one I might just speak to a little bit at the moment is the Women's Empowerment Principles, which is an initiative that's co-owned by UN Women and the UN Global Compact. The women's empowerment principles is actually gaining enormous momentum in Australia at the moment because it particularly looks at the issue of gender diversity. And many of you will be familiar with the concept that gender diversity is really being seen as a key business issue. So companies are really starting to turn their mind to see what they can do to address this, not only in the Australian company context, but also businesses understanding that women's empowerment and women in communities are often absolutely key in terms of sustainable development. I was actually very fortunate as well, although it's not listed there, to be involved in an 18-month multi-stakeholder global task force that was looking at developing a business reference guide to support the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So all of these principles and all of the initiatives that the Global Compact champions are all grounded in very robust human rights frameworks, such as John Ruggie's guiding principles, which I'm sure many of you will be familiar with. Might go on to the next slide. So the Global Compact Network in Australia is one of about 80 local networks around the globe that really looks to promote and support the principles of the Global Compact. In Australia, we have about 70 members, and I think what's so fabulous about the Global Compact is it is multi-stakeholder. So while it is the business-led platform and engagement platform, it's also multi-stakeholder. So we have NGOs as members, we have academia, and importantly, small to medium businesses. If we think that SMEs represent over 90% of employees in the country, then the SME sector is absolutely key to engaging as part of what we're wanting to achieve. So I guess these are some of our members. I'll leave you to have a look. So we've got, they're our business members, I should say. So as you can see, we've got all the banks, all the major accounting firms. It's a pretty fantastic list of people. In Australia, we are actually formally established. We have an MOU with New York. We're not actually an arm of the UN, but we do. We are a company limited by guarantee. We have reporting requirements to ASIC. So we're very formally established in Australia. So I just want to talk just for a little moment about, you know, why a company like KPMG would be involved in the Global Compact, because KPMG International has been a signatory since 2002, and the Australian firm has been actively involved in helping to establish the network in Australia for over the past 5 years. So I guess at KPMG, we believe that business has an absolutely vital and critical role to play in helping to solve some of the world's greatest social and environmental issues. And for KPMG Australia, we really believe that our nation won't reach its full potential until all Australians have equal access to opportunity. And for Australia, I guess, sadly, inequality is most acutely faced by our first Australians. And so the focus of our work in Australia has been with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Australians and seeing how we can bring our skills and expertise to build capability and resilient and sustainable communities, whether they be businesses or not-for-profit organisations, to really see how those communities can self-determine the futures that they want to see. We were the first major accounting firm to launch a Reconciliation Action Plan, and we're very proud that we actually have what's called Elevate status for our RAP, which means we're sort of one of a dozen organisations in the 600-strong community who are leading in best practice. But one of the things that we did that that I don't think any other company's quite done yet is we've contextualised our engagement with Indigenous Australia through a human rights lens. So what we've done is we've actually explicitly mapped each of our RAP commitments against the articles in the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. So in some ways, that's only a subtle sort of nuance change, and in other ways, it's very significant, because what it's done is it's started to create a mindfulness in our organisation about a rights-based approach to how we engage with communities. We launched a human rights statement a couple of years ago, and so that's actually had an impact on our procurement strategies, our grievance mechanisms for staff, and also our client engagement and acceptance practices. So what we're seeing is it's creating a tremendous mindfulness in the organisation about how we approach things. Interestingly too, a couple of weeks ago I was fortunate to attend the Garma Festival. Those of you who know it, it's an annual Indigenous festival in Arnhem Land, with celebration of Yolngu culture. And the evening before, we were invited by the Human Rights Commission to lend our logo to a statement of support for Adam Goods. And I had 2 hours of some of the most thoughtful and considered and fascinating conversations that I've ever had in my organisation with our chairman and our CEO and our national head of risk, quite separately. And I think what was so rewarding for me was that whilst there were obviously risk and reputational aspects that were being discussed, most of what we ended up talking about was what we thought was acceptable and what we tolerate in our organisation, and therefore what we thought was acceptable in the broader nation. So I'm very pleased to say that after those conversations, we did lend our logo to a statement of support the next day. We were one of five businesses who did so. But I do think that what I'm seeing is that the tide is turning. It's absolutely shifting. And in fact, just on Wednesday this week, the Global Compact, in conjunction with the Australian Human Rights Commission, hosted the second national dialogue on business and human rights. Now, we held the first one last year, and we really weren't sure how it would go, because I think the language of human rights, even of sustainable development in businesses, is frankly quite scary. Businesses think, how is this relevant for me? And so they often want to shy away. But I'm pleased to say, once again, we had NGOs, government, business, other civil society organisations in the room, and it really was a tremendous event. So I remain ever positive about what can be done. Just onto the next slide. So under those four thematic areas, we do actually have leadership groups where we bring together members, and also we invite experts on each of those thematic areas to look at, I guess, planning for the year ahead for events that will engage businesses around a national dialogue on sector-specific issues quite often, and also on other key issues that we think are impacting under those thematic areas. We've talked a little bit about the Sustainable Development Goals, so I'm glad that you've got some more detail on what they are. But look, I do agree, Adam, with your comment in terms of them being very ambitious and unattainable. When we were hearing that they were talking about the SDGs and 17 draft goals, of course, our first thought in the business community was, can they get that down? Because it's a lot to grapple with. But I guess that, you know, what we typically did at a global level, as we did with the MDGs for KPMG, we really focused on those that are most relevant to us. So many of you will be familiar with materiality assessments, which many businesses conduct to understand what are the sustainable issues that are most material or relevant to their organisation. So I think one of the best ways for business to grapple with the SDGs is to really look at those SDGs that are most relevant to their business and to come up with focused and dedicated plans to see how they can address those. One great example of a company, I'm sure they won't mind me mentioning them, I'm not sure if we're operating under Chatham House rule, but BHP have recently actually mapped all of their community engagement initiatives against the SDGs. So it's really fascinating seeing how they've applied that. And actually, KPMG International is working with the Global Compact on an SDG matrix that will be sector specific. So there's a group of roundtables and consultations that are going to be happening over the next 6 months, and there'll be some guidance for business around how you can actually align your business strategies with those SDG, with the SDG framework. We'll just skip through that one. So I guess one of the most exciting and recent developments for the Global Compact is that we just launched last week, we had our first meeting of our Sustainable Development Leadership Group, and we actually have DFAT participating in that, because I think government are absolutely a key player, of course, in this. So and DFAT will actually be announcing its private sector engagement strategy next Monday as well. So I think they themselves have been very open and generous in acknowledging that they haven't engaged with business previously, and that actually that's a missed opportunity for them. So we're really looking forward to collaborating with them. So the leadership group's hoping to really engage Australian businesses in the dialogue and build their understanding of the SDGs. You know, I think awareness is still incredibly low. I think it was, despite the call to action, the MDGs were pretty low on the radar. So I'm really ever hopeful that this being the year of sustainable development, with the finance conference recently, with the UN, the Sustainable Development Goals being announced in next month in New York, and then the Road to Paris and the climate talks at the end of the year. I mean, I really do get a sense that there's actually a lot of momentum and things are a little bit positive, and I think all we can do is remain eternally optimistic otherwise, because we really do need to get this right. Just quickly, there is a business engagement architecture that the Global Compact has developed to guide companies on how they can embrace and engage with the agenda. To your point, Well, about accountability, you know, business is really good at setting targets, very good at targets and KPIs and familiar with that, and very good at measurement as well. So I think that's one way in which the business sector is working with others to look at how we can come up with meaningful frameworks that aren't onerous for business to have another layer of compliance or another layer of measurement, but how can we work with existing frameworks to really sort of see what we can do. And just finally, there are some very significant platforms that the Global Compact has in place. I've just at a high level popped up some of those there, so it very much is on the agenda of the Global Compact, and certainly they see business as an absolutely key player in all of this. I mean, we see that sustainability absolutely drives innovation in businesses. You know, we heard earlier about the Tesla car, and you know, you look at the hybrid technology that Toyota created. Unless companies start to think about these issues, they're going to be behind the game. I mean, what we're seeing is an amazing convergence, I think, in time at the moment of sustainability and development issues actually being viewed as core business risks. So with that convergence of these issues, I'm ever hopeful that actually business can be seen more as a force for good. Thank you.